Africa has a lot of potential and we need the help of developing countries like India, Russia.
Any debt that is removed from South African, you know, economy is actually a great deal for the future.
Definitely Western countries should follow this movement of helping African countries even more. I think that there's not enough effort put into African countries as it should be.
The debt which we have been owing to Russia, I think is too huge.
3.5 years on, and Africa is again cheering as Russian President Vladimir Putin sends free grain shipments to famine-hit countries, reinforcing his commitment to the people and development of Africa.
Не будет преувеличением сказать, что это один из неизменных приоритетов российской внешней политики. Если мы все-таки примем решение не продлять эту сделку через 60 суток, то мы готовы весь тот объем, который был направлен за предыдущее время в особо нуждающиеся страны Африки, поставить из России в эти страны.
Hello and welcome to this week's African Now show. We're coming to you from Mozambique, one of the African countries that has benefited from both the free grain shipments and the abolishment of debt announced by Moscow.
Many industrial enterprises have been built on the continent. Entire industries have been created, and vital infrastructure and social facilities have been built. At the same time, Russia wrote off the debt to African states.
In announcing Russia's writing off of debt to the tune of $20 billion, Mozambique, a longtime friend and ally of the Soviet Union and Russia, has been given the chance to look forward and be in control of its own development without crippling debts. I'm joined now via Zoom by Tobias Michuel, a political sciences and international relations expert from Pemba in the north of the country. Thank you so much for joining us. What was the status of Mozambique's debt to Russia before President Putin announced he was abolishing it?
The relationship between Mozambique and Russia, it goes back in the time when Mozambique was struggling to eradicate colonialism. So the first of Mozambican nationalists were trained by the Russians, by the Soviet Union. So the debt started there. So Russia was helping Mozambique through money, through guns, through diplomatic backing. So the debt has been there since even before Mozambique got independence. When independence came in 1975, also Russia, the Soviet Union, helped a lot to establish the government, to establish Mozambique as a state. So how to understand? So the debt was huge. I cannot tell the numbers, because when you help someone to overcome struggle like colonialism, the debt is so huge, you cannot number it. So when President Putin announced this undertaking, it was kind of lifting a burden from the government of Mozambique and for the Mozambican people.
What had most of the money been used for, and why was Mozambique unable to pay it back?
We are speaking in the beginning of Mozambique's state, we are speaking during the Cold War. So we have a world which is polarized. One side you have the United States leading the capitalism, and the other side you have Russia leading the communism and the socialism in the way. So what happened is that after Mozambique got independence, we are speaking of a country which was surrounded by a white minority, both in South Africa with apartheid and with the regime of Ian Smith in South Rhodesia, which is today's Zimbabwe. So Mozambique needed much help from the communist countries like Russia, China, et cetera, et cetera. So this money was used for social endeavors, for social purposes. So to build schools, to eradicate analphabetism, to eradicate some diseases. Just to remind you that in 1979, Mozambique was an example of a successful vaccination. Where did the Mozambique got money from? It was from Russia.
And right now, what are we looking at? Where does this cancellation put Mozambique?
Mozambique is rich in terms of resources, but what are the companies that are taking advantage of that? For the time being, most of them are Western companies. So it means that Mozambique is free from colonialism, but it's not free from economic perspective. So Mozambique relies heavily on the wheels of those big companies. So that's why we say, okay, we are free, but what next? So if you depend on the goodwill of others, and the Western world like to do it, likes to make you feel that you are dependent on them, and they will impose their will on you. So we economically, we are not independent. We still depend on the goodwill of the big powers.
And what does that do to the economy?
We now experiencing a change in geopolitics. So after the disintegration of the Soviet Union, we had the world where the United States was the sole ruler of the world and could impose the wheels all over the world. Now we are speaking of the emergence of China, and we are speaking of the emergence of Russia as powers and as alternatives. So with this, it means that the relationship, even though, as I was saying before, started long before Mozambique got independence, now will become stronger and stronger, because Mozambique has to look for alternatives to the Western world.
Tobias Michael, thank you very much for joining us on African Now. Mozambique is one of the most mineral-rich countries on the continent. Just over a decade ago, in the Rovuma Basin that straddles the Mozambique-Tanzania border, was discovered the biggest natural gas deposits in the last 100 years. That led directly to massive foreign investment and, no surprise, conflict. The US and other countries got involved under the pretext of anti-terrorism and weakened the local economy by constantly providing Maputo with loans. Now, like other African governments, Maputo is in massive debt to the West. Moving across the border to South Africa, it's much the same story. Decades of so-called Western assistance have amounted to nothing except poverty and debt.
Well, African governments are currently owing three times more debt to Western lenders than they do to Russia and China. And a recent report has suggested that just about 12% of that debt is owed to China and almost 50% is owed to the West. This then tells us that the more money poured into this country and many other African countries by the West, the lesser the standard of living. And all of this has repercussions and consequences, and those consequences are written and are seen in every part of the African continent. Currently, I am in the streets of Tembisa, one of South Africa's most overpopulated townships. Tembisa really is one of those townships that struggle to make a living because of the hanging debt that stands over the South African country. I'm just going to move away from the shot so that my colleague can show you the intensity of the situation in Tembisa. As you can see there, a lot of water, a lot of sewage on the streets, and this is a township that really struggles in terms of unemployment, in terms of education, and really trying to make ends meet. A lot of people here complain about those jobs, and they complain about not having houses. The infrastructure in this township is so bad that the population is too much and the infrastructure cannot cope. So even if you build high-res buildings and schools, the infrastructure simply cannot withhold the number of people living in this township.
The economy has never been like this before. They have failed us. We do not benefit from anything. South Africa does not have a functioning economy. Everywhere you go, there's problems. No part of this country can be fixed.
Everything is at a standstill. We don't have jobs. We can't afford to study further. We live in shacks. There's sewage everywhere. We hear about monies coming into the country every now and then, but there's no movement.
Even now, we're supposed to have houses built around the corner, but no progress has come out of those plans. What's the point of having these loans if we're getting deeper into crisis?
There's not much to say about the state of this economy. I don't even know where to start. Everything is just going down. We have lost hope as citizens.
It's clear that African citizens are now starting to realize that Western aid has not been as effective as we see. In fact, it has done more harm, as we're starting to realize, on the streets of the African countries. For RT, I'm Noluvuyo Khunge in Tembisa.
And in Nigeria, it's much the same. In this next report, our correspondent talks us through some unknown facts about the biggest slum in Lagos. A third of this community lives on stilts built over water.
If you have seen one slum, you have seen them all, so they say. But this slum is markedly far from your average.
It's a place that's entirely built on water. This is a residence. There are unaccounted number of people here, because even during the last census in Nigeria in 2007, there wasn't enough people counted here to have a legitimate figure. The only place in Africa where the residents live on water. This whole place is built on stilts. It's often called Africa's Venice because of the numerous pathways and the houses that have been built here on these stilts. It is by far the most amazing place I have ever been. So much for Africans can swim. Well, 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 you're about to get the shock of your life. It is how people move about. It is the only way in which people can make do of this residence. They come from Benin looking for a better life here in this part of West Africa, particularly in Lagos. This is just off of the third mainland bridge. And the people here not only go to school, live and work here, they worship here. The shops sometimes are mobile just off of the third mainland bridge. And they continue to live in these pathways, in these lands. And they spawn children, they live here, they know no other life. If the kids want to go play, they would have to get on a boat in order to get to a play area further away from where we are. The poverty that's around this place, of course, takes it away from what you might know as the romance and beauty of the Italian backdrop it's named after. It's estimated there are over 50 schools here. Let's imagine the size of the place and the population, if that. Running close to 4 decades, as I understand, of people living like this.
Makoko is not a dangerous place, it's a good place. But based on the fact that there is fighting, all this kind of normal thing, fighting here and there, but I've been staying here for the past close to 33 years and I've been fine.
African analysts agree that Russia understands that no nation can develop properly with crippling debts and interests. Will Western countries follow Russia's example and cancel all debts owed to them by African states? Or is that a far-fetched dream? We spoke with Kofi Kouakou, a respected African analyst.
Now, Kofi, thank you again for your time and having to join us today. I think it's very important that we start with the biggest question. And we've seen how Russia has reiterated its commitment to meeting these obligations within the African continent. And as an African analyst, as an African, in fact, what do you make of this move? And where do you see this taking the African continent?
I think it's a very important. First of all, thanks for having me on board. It's a very significant step from Russia. And in fact, Russia is following in the footsteps of China, because I think last year, China has already canceled and forgiven the debt of 23 African countries. I mean, that's significant. And so Russia doing the same thing really reduces the burden of debt to the African countries. But we must also say, we can't keep doing that. And what is really interesting is that this sort of double header from Russia and China puts an enormous amount of pressure on the West.
And I'm quite happy that you mentioned how much this is putting pressure on the West. And with that, how do you see the West going about this? Do you see them rather following suit and doing the same thing that Russia and China has been doing in terms of cutting these debts for African countries?
The first is a traditional scenario, option one, where they're not going to change. They're in the business of making money. And making money means interest rate continuously gouge poor countries that are borrowing from them. And they keep lending. So they have a huge impact and influence on the way these countries are run, because they hold the purse of these countries. And so that's option one, which means they're not going to, it's a traditional behavior of capitalists and funding institutions. That's, they're not going to change easily. The pressure now that's coming from Russia and China is really exposing, if you want, the sort of financial gouging that these poor countries of Africa are going through.
We've actually had a lot of people, a lot of voices and opinions saying that Russia doesn't really just throw money into African economies and African countries. They actually help African economies make their own economic decisions. Where do you stand on that? Do you agree with this statement?
Well, who's going to give money away for free? It's very rare. You know, financial altruism today, as I said again, is one in a million. And when Russia or China does this, people are always very suspicious, because the idea is that who's going to give you money for free? Nobody. But there's a genuine sense from Russia. And in fact, it serves Russia as well. Russia's soft power is now growing very fast. And what is really extraordinary is the pace at which Russia and China are pushing these things, canceling loans, doing development things, and not just talking in glib about democracy. You know, there's this summit on democracy organized by the United States and Zambia. I mean, and strangely enough, the Zambian president has said, you know, we don't eat democracy. So we need more than just a summit on democracy. And that's exactly what Russia and China and other nations are now getting, especially the nations from the South, what's called the Global South, to move to a place where it's not just putting out think tank papers, but to see real development, infrastructure based on health, education, ports, roads, and so forth, to build those so that the continent can really move forward.
A lot of people do say that this is new, but we do get others as well that say this is just a continuation of an old relationship. As an African analyst, how do you explain this? Is this a continuation between Russia and the African economies?
The point is not how new it is, you know. The point is how good and rewarding and profitable it can be to Africa. Being old or new, we're sitting with the old relationship with the West. It hasn't produced much at all. Miseries, and you know, terrorism, all kinds of terrible things. Unemployment is up. Africa has probably got now one of the highest unemployment in the world, not just in general, but among the youth who are just, you know, running away, migrating to Europe and dying in the Mediterranean. Not only that, but also the inequalities have gone up. In addition to that, inequalities are not just not, but also, you know, the fact that people are just not feeling that things are working. So they will consider new or old as long as it delivers. If we want to take the Chinese Deng Xiaoping's point, doesn't matter how white or black or green the cat is, as long as it catches mice. And until the West can deliver, Africans will seek different alternatives, new or old. And I think the Russian alternative is something to consider. Of course, it doesn't, they don't like that.
And Kofi, just before we let you go, I think it's very important to ask this question because it's very important. How much catching up does the West need to do to in terms of its presence within the African continent, especially if you consider Russia and China's presence within the continent?
If they can send, in a matter of 2 months or three or four, more than $100 billion to Ukraine, they can turn it around. And so it's up to the mindset. They need to have a refreshing mindset. And that old mindset that put Africa where Africa is today must change. And they can turn it around, but they have no interest whatsoever to see Africa develop. Because if they did, we would have seen some of the differences. What Africans are looking for is, beside political democracy, they want economic democracy, economic dividends. So this, it's going to be very important for the West when it's in. So they have a lot to catch up. But the way they need to catch up is to change their mindset. But they're not ready to change it. And this is one of the reasons it's going to take them time. And it's almost a little bit late because China is ramping up its relationship with Africa. I mean, at the tune of $262 to $282 billion in 2022. I mean, Russia is now coming in with new ways to really engage Africa. People are thrilled on the African continent to consider alternatives. And that's the point about Africa. Africa has become almost a darling. Our only issue is, do our leaders get it?
Let's travel now to Angola, a country rich in iron ore and uranium, which has also over the years amassed massive debt with the West. We speak with an international relations expert on what Russia's reset with African countries means to this former Portuguese colony.
This is a big way Vladimir Putin is looking for to get a strength, to be more stronger than he was, because he's just analyzing that many countries of Europe running away. They don't want to have the relations that they have before, those European countries had before with the Russia. It's breaking because of this conflict, the war that exists between Russia and Ukraine. That's why Vladimir Putin is looking for potential countries here in our continent, here in Africa, to have a relationship in order that those, the Russian economy or other stuffs cannot go down deeply, because that's why Vladimir Putin is looking for those countries who are available, who wants to create a new relationship, or who want to strengthen the relationship between Africa and Russia.
Another country that is part of the Africa-Russia reset is Kenya. While the US drowns the continent in debt and prevents it from financial freedom, Kenyans are using the relief they've received from Russia to look forward.
President Putin has said the mutual trade turnover has been growing year to year and has reached to up to $18 billion as of the end of last year. The move by Russia will strengthen the ties between Africa and Russia, promoting of cooperation in various sectors, including trade, energy, healthcare, and education, is what the locals are looking forward to. As most importantly, this comes as such a relief for Africa, and specifically Kenya, being a beneficiary to that decision. This is good news, as the Kenya's public debt has crossed to the $72 billion mark for the first time in December, pushing it to the $80 billion ceiling set by the parliament in June last year. This comes at a time of a weak Kenyan shilling, which has built up pressure on the country's external debt repayment, with some up to 69.3% of foreign debt denominated in US dollars.
Borrowing money from the West has lacked accountability from our leaders. Therefore, money borrowed is going into the leaders' pockets instead of being used in the development of the country. This is a huge problem for us as a country.
The solution should be holding our leaders accountable and trying them in the court for misuse of funds. Kenya has debts, and us as taxpayers are paying for that debt. And the debt keeps piling up, but the money goes to the leaders' pockets. So the solution is to hold them accountable and charge them in the court of law. But the problem is we keep electing the same leaders who are stealing from us.
Kenya is one of the countries in the Horn of Africa facing a crippling famine and drought in the coming weeks. Russia's decision to supply free grain to needy African countries couldn't come at a better time to save lives. We discussed this further.
For now, it is still a statement. There hasn't been much that has been, you know, pushed in terms of it developing into something that's tangible. So if it is to materialize, at the moment, some of the countries in the continent, they require food. So generally, that will be a good, you know, a good sort of a development for more food grains to come to these countries, particularly when you go to the West Africa part of the continent, the issue there, it remains to be the higher food inflation, and of course, even going to the middle of the continent, we're going to countries like Rwanda and everything. So we have countries that have higher inflation that has ranged between 24 to some even 60. So it's significantly higher up there. And then when you come to the southern part of the continent, you know, we have had issues with the excessive water, with southern countries like South Africa experiencing severe flooding. But fortunately for South Africa, we have received estimates showing that our grains are somehow a little bit higher compared to the previous season, which is good for the region.
In July this year, African leaders will again converge in Russia, this time in St. Petersburg. On the agenda is Africa moving forward and not being held back by loans they cannot pay. There's a lot of excitement on the continent with Russia's recent moves giving a taste of what's to come. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. You can, of course, always catch us on our social media handles that you see on the screen. We'd love to hear from you, and not only regarding this week's show, but also last week when we were in Somalia exploring a little-known country fighting for its future. Next week, we'll still be here in Mozambique addressing the issue of decolonization of education. And so from now until then, from me and the team, as people here say, adios.